Welcome to the Werewolf Den, where we do a deep dive into the core concepts and principles behind White Wolf's Werewolf the Apocalypse.
I'm Amelin.
And I am Ryan. Okay, next up we have the Flux Realm.
The meme of all of the realms in a lot of sense.
Kind of feels like it. So I think to talk about Flux, I first want to talk about Nexus Crawlers. When I was running my LARP, we did a Cairn build. And I was like, one of the antagonists that has to show up is a Nexus Crawler. And every time I've been a player in a game where the Nexus Crawler shows up, isn't very often, they are just treated as kill buttons. They show up, they bend reality, and you are now a pile of goo. No test, no check, just you're dead. And these were always in LARPs where player deaths were common and they weren't good LARPs. I'll say that right from the start. But they were my first LARPs, and that was sort of the first impression I had of these things. When I was a storyteller and I actually read about them, these are entities of absolute chaos and entropy. There's no sentiency or forethought to this. They are just random, and they should be scary. Random. When they bend reality, or when they break reality, let's be honest here, it's not going to be comforting or pretty. It's going to be Silent Hill-like Lovecraftian horrors that manifest. But I hated the idea of them just showing up, spending an essence, and blap, you're now a pile of goo. Wow, great, awesome. That was a phenomenal game, well done. Ah, hated it. I kind of feel the same way with Flux, where it is an entity of absolute chaos, but it's wild energy. And the problem with having that much chaotic stuff that even the players can't control their own forms is how do you keep a story moving while emphasizing that level of chaos and entropy? Because if you're going here for a reason, it's hard to actually go and do that thing when one second your legs are spaghetti, and then the next second it's raining something weird, and the storyteller's describing all these entropic events, and how do you strike the right balance? I think that is essential to the Flux Realm.
So the way that I deal with it whenever I introduce the Flux Realm to my players is all the spirits have some form of control that they are trying to embody within themselves. All of the totems are trying to either inflict control via their philosophy, they're trying to gain control. And so I've always found that the best way to do it without turning into just either a stopgap, just your story ends by walking into Flux, is by having these pockets of Flux that are viewed via the gaze of, once again, a totem, much in the same way that I talked about with the battlegrounds. Have a totem's influence bring into that. And it's still going to have those random aspects, but it's still going to then have these pockets that are colored then by ideas that only this totem will have. In one of the games I'm running right now, I have a realm that is completely colored by the points of view of Fenris. And I still run it as like Fenris the mad, wild Sun Eater. This is where that notion comes from. That wilder, just aspect of Fenris. But then that gives your players something to grasp onto that isn't just, oh, I grabbed on to a branch and now it's a muffin.
Mm-hmm.
It gives a slight bit of order so that you can narratively progress, but then it still makes it dangerous because then you're taking a totem and kind of driving that totem mad.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be a really fun way to play with Flux, is taking these higher entities, these higher ideas, and then just kind of driving them crazy.
Yeah. And I think another thing the storyteller has to do is kind of come up with a reason why Flux exists. Because all of these near realms have a basis for their existence. They're not just there. Flux isn't the realm of the wild. That's in the Deep Umbra. That's in, like, super abstract country, right? But, like, the book, for example, suggests that the wild created this to basically be a resuscitation device for Gaia, who is being suffocated by the Weaver. And so I think thinking of it, like, what is the purpose of Flux within your setting? Is it this place where Gaia uses it as an oxygen tank to help stay alive? And I think that can be a very cool idea. And again, that gives a player a reason to go there. I'm not going to go there because it's Chaos Central. That just sounds like a dumb idea. But if this is an oxygen tank for Gaia, if I've got a Weaver site that used to be a powerful cairn, seems like a pretty obvious story idea that I bet there's something in the Flux Realm that can knock the Weaver's influence out of this cairn site and make it ready for reestablishment. That's something that a player can work with, not just absolute entropy. And so things like that, I think, are very important for Flux. Next up, we have the Legendary Realm. And like you've been saying, coloring all of these sites through a tribal lens is basically essential with the Legendary Realm. If you're going there as a Gedafenris, it's going to be a lot different than if you're going there as a Bonar. And so I think that's the immediate thing to sort of consider when talking about the Legendary Realm is who's going there and how is that going to impact it? Because if you don't find this other tribe to be particularly heroic, if they're kind of antagonistic to your viewpoints, that's going to impact the way that realm manifests to you.
This can also be a good way for somebody to rediscover why they may be proud of their tribe.
Exactly.
I currently have somebody playing a Gedafenris in my game who just kind of picked it because it's like, oh, it's the punchy tribe. I want to be the punchy tribe. And then I started introducing a bunch of stereotypical Gedafenris NPCs. But I have the option to introduce this legendary realm where there is good. This is a place where you can go to find it.
Yeah, that's an absolutely essential point. It is a place to find the good in any tribe's philosophy. To find their icons and their heroes and be like, this is why I'm in this tribe. Because of this, these reasons.
Mm-hmm. This is why I do what I do. This is why I believe what I believe. It's a cliche that our worlds are based on stories. In the Legendary Realm, that is very much true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an absolute. So next up, we have Pangaea. And both of us have used Pangaea rather significantly within our stories. So I think we have quite a bit to say about it. But it is more than just the primordial face of Gaia. And I think that's important. So every species that has ever existed is in Pangaea. You can find them there. Doesn't matter how recently they have gone extinct. They're present there. And so it's more than just volcanoes and molten lava spewing out.
Dinosaurs!
Right? It's sort of the collecting site for all of Gaia's creations as well. And so, yeah, there's a lot of dimension to it. One thing I like about Pangaea is that the worm views it as a bad place, and I kind of really dig that idea. You know, the corrupted worm views it as a bad place. And so when I was running my LARP, I used it as a site where the worm was untainted, where you could go there and find the worm doing its actual natural purpose and emphasizing that to the players. So when the great meta plot turns out to be that the worm's air quote sanity has broken free, it's going to go there because if it can combine with Pangaea's worm, then it's whole again sort of thing in its own messed up way. And so I think there's a whole lot of different story elements that you can draw to here, aside from just cavemen and dinosaurs to work with, that it's more than those things.
The biggest thing I always like to use with Pangaea is it is the place where something began as well as where something ended. And that kind of dynamic can also then make really good for players who are, if you've dropped a giant mystery in your story, this can be a place where players can go to like, oh, the clues are long dead in the modern world. The clues are long non-existent within this modern world. We could quest to, oh, the abyss maybe to find lost things, or we could go back to the beginning of it when it was still here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know Ryan's basically doing that right now in one of his story arcs.
Yeah. I'm trying to get in touch with my ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
So start from the beginning, right?
Mm-hmm. And Pangaea is a good spot for players to go to kind of rediscover their roots in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And to get back to just your basic concept in a lot of ways, too. Like, if you feel like, man, my character has kind of evolved and gotten away from me in a lot of different ways that I wasn't anticipating, and I'm thinking I may not like them so much, Pangaea is a good spot to go back and almost like doing a spiritual cleanse in a lot of ways. You can think and treat Pangaea like this, because that is where the Garou started. This could be considered where the cause of protecting Gaia began. And you can go back to that primitive or just pure, depending on how you look at it, and mm-hmm. find that purpose again.
And while I don't think it has to have a red and tooth and claw manifestation, because again, it's a place where all of these creatures have come to reside, right? I think it is something that needs to be pointed out, that You know, a lot of the Gaian realms are very peaceful and serene, and they give you these epiphanies of peace and tranquility and love and things of that sort. With Pangaea, you have, you know, volcanoes erupting, and all of this primordial power is there. And so within the modern setting, the Garou have sort of come to embody Gaia's, you know, red and tooth and claw side. Gaia's brutality and ferocity and strength. And I think it's cool to emphasize that. It doesn't have to color everything, because then it loses something of its beauty and its purity.
Mm-hmm. But there is purity in that tooth and claw sense. That's the point. Mm-hmm. That's why werewolves are proud to be werewolves in Werewolf the Apocalypse. If they weren't proud to be werewolves, you'd be playing New World. There's pride to being Garou, and that pride can be bloody, but that's not necessarily a bad thing within this particular World of Darkness setting.
Mm-hmm.
If you're wanting, like, a She-Ra sort of cleanse, you're probably playing the wrong game at that point. Not necessarily. A good storyteller can run with just about anything. But when I talk about that serenity of being who you are, remember, who you are is a werewolf. You are a monster.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fun to play with, too.
Next up, you know, not a Gaian realm at all, we have the Skaar. So the Skaar is impacted by the Industrial Revolution, but I don't think it stops there. I think anyone who's worked in, like, customer service can have a very powerful impact on their manifestation of the Skaar. Where
Skaar anchorheads exist within every retail worker's heart.
Yes, basically. Every Sunday afternoon when the Karens roll in, every store becomes the Skaar. But it is a place where not only the worm-like manifestations of pollution and environmental destruction manifest, but it is a place where humanity's work loses its meaning. It loses any higher purpose and just becomes soul-crushing. So any experiences you've had in those settings, put that in the Skaar. Add to that. Combine it. Have your 1750s, 8-year-old child laborer who works in the coal mines right alongside the college graduate who's still stuck at Walmart and plowing through to try and get out of their student debt, which is crushing, and just combine all of these ideas in the same place. Don't get lost in one time or one setting. Fuse it all together and make it seem all the more monstrous.
I don't have anything to add. That basically sums it up right there.
But yeah, there's a lot to work with here because it is a site that the worm really embodies. And so, you know, it's a great place to go in and just be a psychotic Gaian eco-terrorist. You know, the books mention that a lot of these factories turn out worm fetishes. I kind of wish Pangaea had something like that. I don't know. Seems a little biased towards the worm, but whatever.
The worm's winning! That's why!
Shut up! Pangaea, we'll just go hide in Pangaea. But yeah, something like, and speaking of Pangaea, let's bounce back to that for a little bit. We were just talking about it. Let's bounce back. One of the things that's mentioned in the book is that people think that there is some secret within Pangaea to maintaining Gaia after the apocalypse has happened. And I think that's another cool example of a way to utilize these, because again, we want these hypotheses and theories about these near realms. The title Near Realm is kind of misleading because there's so many mysteries to unpack. They're really kind of unexplored in the grand sense because they're so big, so cosmic, constantly changing, that sort of thing. And so finding that purpose for the Skaar. Why should your players go there? What sort of secrets can they unpack? And for crying out loud, if you have someone who pulls an idea out of nowhere and is like, this is why we should go to the Skaar, because we can find out something about this. Work with that. Don't let your ideas of what this realm is limit your players. If they have an idea and can execute something, you know, this is sort of the grand thesis of the Umbra. Work with what the players throw at you, because it's such a great opportunity for storytellers. To not have to homebrew all of this stuff, but to allow players to be like, think about the world, get back to me, bounce ideas off of me.
One way to always look at it is if your player had that idea, they're not the first one to have that idea.
Yeah.
So it exists within the Umbra.
Exactly. So what purpose can players have to go to the Skaar aside from just blowing up a fetish factory? Like, what can they figure out? And I think from a history perspective, there are examples, like with the Industrial Revolution, where people were crushed by it. It was horrible. You're working 18 hours a day. You're surviving off of coffee because you don't have time to go and get a lunch break. But there are opportunities that come from this. You're making money you didn't have before. And even though it's getting blown by, you know, landlords raising rents and all of their, you know, student loans in the modern sense, there's still some promise to this. There's some opportunity. And so finding those little slivers that players can work with, that's what makes a great story. And so, again, kind of like we talked about previously, put that idea of hope out there. Put that positive aspect of the cyber realm in place for players to work with. Put something that players can gravitate towards in the scar rather than just setting everything on fire. Because while that can, you know, be fun to just be a murder hobo for a session, you can add a little something on top of that. Put a cherry on top of that Sunday of murder hobo-y. Last up, we have Wolfholm, which is an interesting site, and there's a lot of stuff to sort of unpack with it. So within the Wolfholm, the big manifestation that I always read about is the idea of the wolf's place as a hunted creature. And the book lists that, you know, people are in helicopters with sniper rifles just shooting at wolves, and all Garu lose their gifts, and they are truly wolves in this setting. And come to experience sort of the horror nightmare, the worst manifestation of what the Red Talons are about. I think there's some stuff to work with there that makes it quite unique, especially like comparing it to Pangaea, where you have, you know, great wolf packs on the roam, and you're an apex predator in a sense, so long as you don't bump into a dinosaur or what have you kind of thing. Wolfholm strips that away. You're just a wolf, and they're in a helicopter with a machine gun. What is your place in this world? And I think that's where you have to sort of look for story ideas within Wolfholm. If players are going to go here, kind of in a sense with the Atrocity Realm, like we talked about, like what is the purpose for their visiting this site?
Most frequently when I come up with this area, I introduce it when I am dealing with a player who, comparatively to their pack, is starting to show a lot of arrogance. Nothing can touch me. Without the rest of the pack, this player obviously would be nothing. But then this player is just like, and I see Ryan smiling because
he
feels like...
You're making way too much eye contact. You're talking about my character. I know it.
I am actually not specifically talking about Ryan.
I don't want to go to Wolfholm.
But this is a good place to go with if, per se, obviously talk it over with your player. Don't throw them in and be like, learn to be humble, player. But... this is a great, like, Silverfang thing to do, per se. If you have a player who's like, hey, I have this character, and, like, the fly eventually want to overcome is, like, his arrogance. Talk with him about potentially finding Wolfholm as part of his journey, and have that discussion with the player. This can be a good thing to use with that.
Mm-hmm. But any sort of lupine angle can work really well here. I can see, like, if you're trying to reintroduce wolves and increase the population, here is a place where being a wolf is a central concept. And so finding an umbral quest angle to explore, I am going to reproduce and I sure hope we get some lupine Garu, then doing a quest here to understand what you are subjecting your children to sort of increase the chance on the roll of dice that you're gonna have an actual Garu child. I think that you're laughing at me. Why are you laughing at me?
I'm not laughing at you. I am laughing because longtime listeners will remember we talked about that player who did the I am a beautiful silver fang and I am going to turn into a dire wolf and mate with this normal wolf. And yeah. I'm just like, oh god, that would have been so perfect to unleash on that player.
You're going to Wolfholm.
You're going
to Wolfholm.
If that
wasn't a LARP, I probably would have, yeah. If I had had some time to do something, I'd be like, meh, you're going here. Deal with it. You're going to learn what it's like. But yeah, I think there are some interesting angles to work with there and to think about for Wolfholm and why players would go to it. So that covers it for the Near Realms. For the next episode, we're going to be doing a Q&A episode. There are a lot of questions that we've gotten, many of them repeat number of times. And so we figured it would be a good idea to sort of compile it into an episode. So I hope you'll join us for that next time. See you.
Bye.
Welcome to the Pentex Break Room.
Curses! You foiled those banes of procrastination we sent your way. We thought you'd been done. Ah, well, we still have one trick up our sleeves. You're done with the tribes, and so you really have to think about your episodes. And you're doing a Q&A, which makes it sound like you're running out of ideas. So we'll just... yeah, we'll leech onto that one. We'll defeat you yet.
Thank you for requesting your banality banes. See you next time.